Welcome to the Security Perimeter, an apocalyptic podcast, starring my dad, Athanasios Christoulas. This is an awesome podcast, the best, guaranteed, 100%. We'll make Perimeter Podcast great again. My name is Lambro Christoulas, your announcer. And now, to my dad, Athanasios Christoulas, a.k.a. Saki.
Mariana, you're not going to believe the guest that I got this week. Can you guess who you think it is?
Putin?
Pretty close. I got somebody who actually interviewed Putin about 17-18 years ago. His name is Jorge Berry. He's a reporter that he was a reporter, announcer, broadcaster. Do you really?
Yes. The show is called Echo.
Right. That's what he told us about. Yeah. It's more like our generation, right? My generation.
Yeah, and it was a new thing because it was the first channel that would broadcast news all day long. And we never had that before.
That's right. That's what he said. It was like the CNN of.
It was a big thing.
It was the CNN of Mexico.
It was very big.
So was he famous? Yeah, I think the 80s and 90s. He was really famous, right?
I remember him very
He's still pretty famous. I mean, he's not only famous for. You know, the new stuff, but he's also famous because he was in a famous rock band that was essentially banned in Mexico in the 60s. And did you know that about Jorge Berry? And they wrote this famous song called Tlatelolco, which was about the 68 incident, and he got into trouble for that. In fact, Mariana, the song you're listening to right now in the background is that famous song. And the band was so famous that they opened for the Doors when the Doors came to Mexico.
Cool.
Do you want to know what the name of the band was?
Yeah.
Pop Music Team.
I'm sure Jim Morrison was like, what? Who are they?
Pop Music, of all the fucking names that you can think of, or they could think of for a name, Pop Music Team? It sounds very 80s, actually.
80s,
that's why I asked him.
The music wasn't like that.
No, it's 60s, 70s. That's why I asked him, is your band from the 80s? You know, sort of like my band.
Maybe they did it on purpose.
Maybe they were
singing subversive songs with a pop name.
To try to trick Gobernación. Yeah. Yeah, that could be it. So Jorge basically, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but I'm just going to say that he essentially says that Putin's a pretty scary guy, and he did something really freaking nasty to Jorge, which you have to listen to a podcast.
Okay.
He went to Moscow to do the interview. Yeah, and it's there that Putin did the really nasty thing to him that makes him like an asshole. I got to ask him the question that I've been wanting to ask somebody who knows Putin for a very long time. I don't want to tell you what the question is, but it's something that it's a hypothesis that I've had about what possibly explains Putin's behavior. And Jorge has an answer for me.
Great.
On that question.
Okay, let's hear it.
Let's find out what the answer is.
Sounds intriguing.
You have to listen to the episode to find out.
Okay, I will.
Will you?
Yes.
I don't believe you. It's only about an hour.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Okay, so on to the podcast. A security Perimeter Podcast, Jorge Berry. Mr. Berry is one of Mexico's most famous / infamous, maybe a little bit.
A little bit of both.
Reporters. Because I'm a foreigner and I don't know so much of your career, but I do know some of it, could you tell us a little bit about when you started working as a reporter, investigator, and with who, and then how your career evolved to the point that you actually interviewed Mr. Putin, Vladimir Putin, which, by the way, you can see right there, I happen to love, because I got, that means Putin is sexy in Russian. I have issues with Putin. I think your son told you.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
So do I.
Okay, good. But, okay, so tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, I started out doing sports.
Is that right?
45 long years ago.
Is that right?
That's right. And I moved to L.A. during the 80s. Yeah. I was there for practically the whole Reagan period. Even got a Super Bowl ring because I used to do the play-by-play for the then LA Raiders.
Is that right?
In Spanish.
I guess so. For which network?
That was for radio, but on TV I worked in Univision.
Okay. Univision existed, I'm not going to say back. Well,
yeah, way Univision back then. Yeah.
No, not way back then, because.
Well, it was 30 years ago. I mean,
I thought Univision is like something that only came about the last 20 years or
no,
so,
no.
The last 15 years or
no.
So. Okay, well, there you go. See my ignorance.
Different name, but it was okay. The same.
Okay.
I did work in the U.S. for 7 years. Kind of set me into the international arena because, you know, Mexican news, like news all over the world, covers mostly local.
Yeah, sure.
But then Televisa had just started a beautiful experiment that was called Echo. I don't know if you're aware of that.
What year was that? Miss Suena.
That was 1989.
No, it's before my time here.
This was kind of a CNN in Spanish.
Okay.
Okay, we went 24 hours news. And they poured a lot of resources in it. And I was made responsible for all the international news gathering, which was huge. We had, something like 40, 50 correspondents on payroll all over the world.
All over the world?
Yeah. So I got to cover, for instance, the election of John Major when Margaret Thatcher stepped down.
Wow, that's going back.
Yeah. And when this guy was 3 years old, I was in the middle of the Kosovo War.
93, 94, 95.
A little bit later than that, 99.
Oh, the Kosovo. Sorry, I thought you meant the Bosnian War, 99, yeah. Just for the podcast listeners, Jorge Berry's son is here, who I call Barry Manilow. See, he didn't get that joke, but I knew you would.
Oh, yeah.
So you were just 3 years old then. So you were actually in Kosovo.
I mean, I was actually in Belgrade. I covered Belgrade.
Oh, you covered from Belgrade. Wow, that's where the bombing took place.
I know. I was 6 weeks under the bombs there.
Wow.
Then when I got back from that, I was, I don't know if promoted is the right word, but I was given a national newscast. The morning show.
In Echo, in that...
No, this was now Channel 2.
Canal 2.
The big one, yeah.
Yeah.
And there I did a couple of years of that, from 6 to 9 every morning.
He's got the voice, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
I mean, that either radio voice or... Or announcer, definitely announcer voice.
Yeah. Especially when he talks in English.
Well, I'm imagining him like calling the play-by-play on the NFL thing, and it's the right voice, you know. Okay, sorry, Jorge.
Then when I was in the middle of a newscast when Twin Towers came down.
Shit.
So
how'd you handle that?
Oh man, I was. If were you here during that time period?
Yeah.
Okay, I was in the middle of an interview.
Yeah, I got here in 96, so
I was in the middle of an interview with Aguilar Sincer. Remember him?
Yeah, I know Adolfo, yeah. Well, I used to know Adolfo, yeah.
Yeah.
At that time, he's National Security Advisor, actually, right?
Actually, he was Mexico's representative to the UN.
Okay, so it's post... That's right. That's when he was right.
That's when he was fighting Castaneda.
Yeah, and then when Castaneda and him get into a
Yeah. So, right in the middle of the interview, we start getting the pictures of the site of the first plane crash with one of the towers in flames.
And he said, "What'd you think? Accident?"
Yeah, my first thought was accident.
Yeah,
some air controller is going to get it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But then when the second one hit, no, there was no question about it.
Is Adolfo still there?
Yeah, Adolfo's still there because he's going, man, I'm scheduled to go to New York this later today.
It ain't going to happen.
Ain't going to happen. So Anyway, that day I went from 6 in the morning till 4 p.m. straight.
Remember what the look on your face was when you realized that it was a terrorist attack?
Yeah,
because I asked this because there's millions of people watching you at the time. So how did you hold your stuff together?
I think that's the most recognizable moment in my career for people. That mostly I'm remembered by that.
Okay.
Yeah. Because everybody knows where they were. It was kind of shocking. And then I left for New York that afternoon.
How?
I have a brother who lives in El Paso.
Okay.
So I went to Juarez.
Yeah.
Crossed on foot.
The border was open?
Yeah.
This is the same day, 9/11?
Yeah, the same day.
Okay.
And I had a green card, so...
Okay.
Jumped on a plane to Dallas.
Well, hadn't they grounded all the planes at that point? On that?
Just in the New York area.
I see. Okay.
So I went... I got on a plane to Dallas. In Dallas, I was, standing in line waiting for... to get to the ticket counter. And there was this Arab guy... in the line.
And everybody's freaking out.
Oh, no. He got pulled by security.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I flew from Dallas to Philadelphia.
And then
I got a cab. I cabbed it to New York.
An expensive cab, but a doable cab.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. Oh, so why'd you go to New York? To cover it?
Yeah, sure.
So you were covering...
The next day... I was out live from New York.
Yeah, when Bush was there or when...
Yeah.
Who was the mayor?
Giuliani.
Giuliani's there with Clinton. They're all holding hands. How close were you able to get to the actual...
To the Ground Zero?
Yeah.
Not very close. We were mostly about five blocks away. You couldn't get any
closer.
That's
pretty close. I thought maybe you'd be in like... 42nd Street or 47th Street or something like that.
It was closer than that. But it was pretty chaotic.
The Broadway.
The streets were a desert and nobody was on the streets. It was like a ghost town.
And you could walk from...
Sure.
Were the cabs running?
That's a good question. I don't know. I guess they were. But not many. I mean, if you can conceive of New York City without traffic... That was it.
That was the day.
We're driving, and you could see the column of smoke from miles and miles
and
away.
And the junk that it's dropping also, right?
Yeah.
In the process? I mean, people... Remember, that we'd see in the news, of course, people that were just blackened.
Yeah.
Safe, physically, but...
Yeah.
The dust had fallen on them.
But for us, it was a really big story, because a lot of Mexicans were killed, and a lot of...
How many Mexicans were killed?
They don't really know.
But it was a...
We're talking
like 50, 60?
Yeah, 40, 50.
Now, these are people that were working? These are like Mexican-Americans? Yeah, or are they...
No. A lot of them weren't.
Okay, so
a lot of them were immigrants,
like, undocumented migrants working in...
Restaurants
and cleaning.
Yep.
Oh.
And then the story also became the first responders, and there were a lot of Hispanics there, too. So it was a big story. We spent a week there. Mexico blew it, by the way, terribly, because Fox should have been one of the first ones there.
I would agree with you.
Condolences and stuff, and he didn't, and Bush took note. He wouldn't see him for a while.
Yeah, even Chrétien in Canada hated Bush. Came out right away.
Yeah.
I mean, those two guys hated each other. And supposedly Fox and Bush were big buddies, right? They had, they had gone to the rancho drinking tequila and all that kind of stuff. I have it from good sources that Fox was being advised at that time and being pulled in different directions by Adolfo on one side and Jorge on the other side. And that was the reason for the delay. But either way, I agree with you. It was like, who would not like come out right away and say, oh my God, this is a horrible thing? let's just say that they had personalities that kind of
clashed
and it made things difficult for Mexico's foreign policy at that time. So, okay, so what happens next after that in your career?
Okay, so this is obviously 2001,
2002, around that time.
Yeah, and then by 2002, I left the news show and went back to doing the international stuff with all the correspondence stuff.
At Canal Dos or at Echo?
No, at Echo.
Oh, okay.
Because Echo, since it was going 24 hours a day, it could use all the stuff, you know? And Echo, by the way, you could see Echo in Paris.
Is that right?
Yeah. You could see Echo anywhere. It was kind of like a CNN operation, but in Spanish.
CNN en Español, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so you dealt with, I guess you were one of the international correspondents, for obvious reasons, right?
I was the boss of all of them.
Oh, okay. And where were you based at that time?
Mexico City.
So
then they're going to have this this international meeting for the Trans-Pacific
Partnership.
Yeah, no. Not in the partnership. You know, man.
We can't remember. We're looking at Barry because he's got a fresh mind, young mind. And neither of us remember. Some kind of meeting in the Pacific.
Well, all the Pacific was countries, like, and then Europe and stuff. You know, all the big shots in Los Cabos. You're supposed to be.
Oh yeah, that was. Darn.
Damn. Pacific Rim, something like
that. Okay. I kind of vaguely remember. But okay, so you're at that meeting.
Yeah.
Okay. You're covering that meeting.
Well, the meeting has not yet happened. It's scheduled, okay? And then, so Putin announces he's going to come to the meeting. And right after...
Now, at this point, he's actually president of...
Yes,
of,
he is, of, but he's only been there for a couple of years.
Yeah, exactly.
So
of the Russian Empire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He announces...
Oh, did I say that? Did I say the Russian Empire? I didn't mean it. Okay.
He was not yet Tsar, though.
Yeah, Tsar Putin announces that he's going to. He's almost there. I mean,
almost there.
Just a couple more laws and get rid of the.
Couple more invasions.
Yeah. And we'll be all set. Okay, so Putin
announces he's coming.
Which, by the way, you know, is junk food in Canada, right? Poutine?
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's like French fries and cheese curds and. Okay, so Putin comes, says he's going to go to the meeting, and
so then the Russian embassy called me, because after the meeting, he was going to come to Mexico City and do an official state visit.
Okay.
Okay. That meeting...
This is with Fox, right?
Yeah, this is with Fox. At that meeting, Bush was going to be there, China's guy was going to be there.
Well, Bush loved him.
Yeah.
Bush loved Putin.
He could look into his soul.
Yeah, exactly. You remember that thing?
Yeah, sure.
It's like, what the...
So...
But, you know, in Bush's defense, he didn't know what Putin was really like at that point.
Nobody did. Anyway, so I get called to the Russian embassy and tell him, listen, would you like to do an interview with Mr. Putin? Because, you know, we'd like him to be known in Mexico before he comes and blah, blah. I said, sure.
They love the idea.
Yeah.
And that fits Putin's personality, actually. Yeah.
So off I go to Moscow.
You went to Moscow?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, I thought you did the interview here in Mexico.
No. I did it in Moscow.
Oh, so you flew to Moscow?
Yeah.
In the Kremlin? Or?
Yeah, in the Kremlin. So, you know, we get there.
How many dungeons were there in the Kremlin?
This was the Kremlin. It wasn't Lubyanka. It was the Kremlin.
Sorry. Okay. I confused the two. I don't, you know. Sorry. Okay. Lubyanka was a prison. It is a prison still, actually. In Moscow.
In Moscow.
Yeah.
So, interview scheduled for, like, 4 p.m. Mm-hmm. And so, they come pick us up at the hotel, and we get there.
So who's with you?
My camera crew.
Just the crew?
Yeah.
Okay.
Two guys.
And a producer.
Engineer and cameraman.
Okay.
That's it. Because I produce my stuff. So
you're doing your own? Yeah.
So we get there, and boy, the Kremlin, in the inside, it's
I mean, such I've seen palace, pictures.
It's impressive.
Tsar Putin, right?
And I got to know him pretty well because he made us wait for 6 hours. He didn't show up till 10 p.m. or 11 p.m. or something like that for the interview.
Yeah, well, I'm sure he was off torturing somewhere. Okay, so you guys had to, were you just sit in the chair for the 6 hours? Or did you get a bit of a tour of the place?
A little bit, because I asked for the guy, listen.
Is he coming or not?
Yeah. This is going to take long. Let me take a look at this stuff.
Yeah.
No, you can't. Well, I got to go to the restroom. Okay, mate. So then he takes me and said, come on, let me peek in there. Okay, so I got to see a couple of the salons.
Okay, the salons, yes. Yes.
I'm
trying to think of something witty to say, but I can't do it right now.
Well, this is veiled in a...
early 19th century kind of empire-ish kind of look, right?
Yeah, right. But the atmosphere of the place and the looks of the... Russian security, they're all over the place. You know, it's intimidating.
Okay.
It really is intimidating.
Okay.
So, okay, finally, Putin makes it.
I guess they had to, shake it down a little bit, right? Frisk you, that kind of stuff?
No, actually, they didn't.
There was no metal detector thingy or... Well, I guess if the guy's coming with the camera, it's going to,
They checked the equipment, yes.
Yeah.
But that was about it. And they were filming also their own version, and we were filming ours.
Okay, what year is this?
This is 2002.
Okay, what month more or less, if you can remember?
Kind of like August.
Okay. All right, so you're there, 2002, late 2002 at some point.
Yep.
You're waiting 6 hours.
Yep.
You got to use the bathroom.
Yep. And so the man arrives. He came in with a couple of more guys, not more.
He's pretty short, right?
He's pretty short.
Yeah,
actually,
he's got the Napoleon complex thing going there.
Not that short. I mean,
oh, okay.
He's probably, I'd say, maybe 5'10".
Well, that's not that short. I mean, that's not short at all. That's kind of normal.
He's taller than me.
I'm 5'10".
He's probably.
Oh, you just called me short. I'm not short. Okay, all right. Okay, so I always thought he was like a...
I'm short.
I always thought he was like a, kind of small stature. But no, he's pretty full, right?
Yeah, okay. But and he's...
And you could see
he's
that...
muscled.
You could see it through the suit that he's wearing.
Beautiful tailored suit. I mean,
right.
He's always been a sharp dresser.
That's true. All right, so he comes with his guards, and I guess you guys stand up, right?
Yeah, sure, Mr. President. That's when the picture gets taken.
Okay.
You know Jonathan Davis?
No.
He used to be treasurer for Mexico.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, I don't know.
Under Fox, I guess. Under Fox.
Okay, no.
Anyway, I know him personally. And he asked me to get an autograph for his son, which I did.
And you didn't get one for me? For me?
You didn't ask.
He was 3 years old? Well, no, you're not 3 years old.
I was 7.
Now, if this is going to become an issue between... I can recommend a therapist if you wish. You didn't... I love the response, too. It's like, well, you didn't ask. You didn't ask, man. You gotta ask. So you only got one Putin signature.
Yeah, but I got the picture, which is...
Well, yeah. I thought you would have made him like sign like 10 of them or something like that. In defense of your son's
interest.
He would have done it.
Yeah.
So... We did the interview, which was cumbersome. The interview was cumbersome.
Did you do it in his office, or did you do it?
No.
One of the samples.
It's always difficult to do an interview with translation back and forth, especially when you understand not a word.
Well, so who's your translator in Spanish?
We didn't have one. We relied on
the English.
On the translation that he had a Spanish to Russian translator.
Ah, okay. All right.
So this is the guy we took the audio.
Okay.
Of course, in that setting, You don't really get to ask difficult questions.
Of course not.
And besides, he was kind of new at the job. You didn't have a whole lot to criticize him yet. So you're talking to him, and even though the subject has nothing to do with it, you know, you're talking about it, agriculture and maybe commercial exchange between Mexico and Russia, blah, 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 you know. But you can see KGB all over his eyes.
Is that right?
I mean, he is a scary guy.
In what sense? Well, yeah.
Primal sense. It's happened to me twice.
Mm-hmm.
With him,
mm-hmm.
and once when I interviewed Mike Tyson.
Hmm. The look on their face?
The presence, the atmosphere. Scary. It's really scary.
As opposed to someone like Fox, who would have been more relaxed and,
sure.
and swearing every third word, obviously.
Hey, you know, I've done interviews in prison with killers, and you don't get that sense.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow, that's saying a lot.
Yeah.
Like, what was it, the look on his face, or just...
It's the look on his face, the atmosphere he exudes. He just exudes danger. I think it's a biological reaction.
Was he always looking forward like this on his elbows, or was it at a table, or was that a chair?
No, he was in a chair, and I was in...
Was he leaning back, or was he leaning forward?
He was leaning back.
Is that right?
And sometimes he would look...
Well, they say
he would look away, and he would look down. But then when he came back and focused on you, he said, oh, shit. Sorry.
No, it's fine. If you want me to take it out, I'll take it out. I can leave it, I'll leave it.
You can leave it.
Okay.
And then that whole night, so when we finished the interview, and by now it's like 1 a.m.
So the interview went on a couple of hours.
He just took so long to get there. The interview went for about 45 minutes, not more than that. So, okay, so at that point, once Putin leaves... And we gather up our stuff. Security just said, okay, so long, you guys.
Uh-huh.
He said, well...
Yeah, what?
You're not going to take us back to our hotel? No.
Fuck.
So this is 1 a.m.
That's part of the intimidation
You're
process.
Walking out of the Kremlin.
Right.
Right into Red Square.
Which is, at that point, and still today, an extremely dangerous city.
In the dead of night.
Yeah, it makes Mexico City look like...
With a lot of equipment on
Geneva.
And we're all alone, man.
That was part of the intimidation. I bet you that was part of the intimidation.
Yeah, physical. He didn't have a motive to try to intimidate. I just think it's the way he is.
Okay.
You know, he just sees the world through that lens all the time.
So you guys had to take a cab to...
Yeah. But at that time, not
like
a lot of cabs
are
running around, you know.
Okay, so what were some of the questions you asked them? What was the first question you asked them?
Oh, boy.
I know, I'm putting you on the spot.
I think the first question was, have you ever been to Mexico?
Okay.
No, but Mexico is a great country. Bob, you know.
Like regular.
It was kind of a fluff piece. Really.
Pre-packaged answer, yeah. Okay, so what were some of the other questions you guys, or the issues you guys dealt with?
Well, his relationships with the U.S. were at that point were not...
They were pretty good.
Yeah. Were not bad.
Yeah.
I should have. I didn't touch upon the breakup of the USSR, which...
Oh, you would have triggered him if you did that.
Yeah.
Because we now know that that's the
that's
thing
the heart
that
of the
sets
thing.
Him
that's,
off. Yeah.
That's what gets him.
You should have.
Your problem with the whole deal was that he never made it to Mexico.
Okay.
He didn't come to the meeting. He didn't do the state visit because 2 days after I left Moscow,
mm-hmm.
the Chechen theater thing blew up.
Which he set up, by the way.
That I don't know.
Yeah, that's the thinking is that... You're talking about the buildings that blew up in Moscow?
No, remember the theater when they had all these hostages?
Right, and then they had to use the gas to... Yeah. Okay, so that's separate from the apartment buildings. There was one incident with apartment buildings that they kind of came down, and they blamed the Chechens. It turned out that it was... There's a lot of evidence to suggest that it was Russian Secret Service. The theater also, I'm not quite sure, but some people have said that this was a setup also. But as you know, not only were the terrorists killed, but also, like, I think half the people who were in the theater, they just indiscriminately threw in gas. Yeah, I mean, that's Putin's way, right?
And, you know, I could have killed myself afterwards, because I said, man, if I just waited a couple of days, I would have been in the story.
Yeah.
But I didn't, so I had to have another guy cover it, because I was already back.
You should have gone back. Or you just tired?
No, but it was, you know, logistically it was kind of difficult for me to go back.
Like you said, a lot of the questions were kind of pre-canned, and his responses were pre-canned. But you said something about him looking away. What did you mean by that? I mean, he would, in the middle of a question, he would just look away, or?
Yeah. Especially in the middle of the translations.
What do you think he was doing?
I don't know. But in the middle of the translations,
he would look away.
He would look away.
That's got to mean something. I don't know,
but he didn't, obviously, he didn't understand the Spanish that was the translation.
Yeah, but either he's hard of hearing and he was turning his ear to...
Was thinking.
I don't know. It's got to mean something. Like one of these forensic type people would say that it means...
He does it a lot. If you watch Helsinki with...
You know, you're right, actually.
If you're looking for it, you'll see him do it a lot.
He does it a lot. That's an interesting move. The perception of Putin at that time was that he was going to be like Yeltsin Part 2, but better.
Yeah.
Right? Yeltsin had the issues of alcohol, plus also the economic instability. The Soviet Union, Russia's a mess economically, and its leadership is a mess. So when Putin comes in, the idea is that he's going to continue the tradition of democracy, but he's just going to focus on improving the economic aspects, the political instability, which initially he did. And in that sense, this is why he seemed almost acceptable to the West in these first few years. Is that the sense you got from him when you interviewed him, that he was going to, that he's a Democrat who's going to be a good guy?
No.
And you knew then that this is bad news.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't have the look of a Democrat, not at all. Not at all. I mean, his whole setup, his whole demeanor, the security around him, the looks on people who work his security details, you know. I mean, he's in his house, man, and they're still all, you know.
Do you know, Jorge, you know why this is so important, what you're saying? Because so many people, in a way, kind of defend Putin. And say that, well, you know, it was NATO expansion that, you know, set him off. NATO expansion into Eastern Europe. And he got scared. You know, he got scared that NATO was going to get too close. I keep on telling people when they say that I do not think fear is something that characterizes any aspect of this man's personality.
Except for when he was caught in Berlin when the wall came down.
Yeah, he learned a big lesson there.
Yeah.
He learned that people are dangerous. And he went out and threatened them.
Yeah.
But
he got scared.
This is in the context... Let me give us a background here. When the wall comes down, Putin is trying to contact Moscow to get orders from... I think he's in Dresden, right? At that time, I'm not quite sure. He's one of the KGB offices in East Germany. And nobody in Moscow is giving him any kind of response. So he doesn't know what to do. The first thing that he starts doing is he starts burning all the freaking documents that he has. And then the next thing, as the people are trying to, like, you know, come into the offices of the KGB or the consulate or something like that, he goes out and threatens them and he says, we're going to start shooting at you. And the lesson that he learned from that, apparently, is that movements of people are dangerous. This is why... I've heard
he hates Hillary so much because
right exactly
he blames her for the
right for the protests post election. I don't remember which one where you had a lot of people coming out and saying that this thing was rigged, which it obviously was.
It always is, yeah.
And he was mad at Clinton because she didn't help him. In fact, she did the opposite. She criticized him. She said, you know, let democracy take its process, take its run. So, like, the stuff that you've seen that's come subsequently, for example, some of the, you know, primarily for the annexation of Ukraine, this is not something that surprises you.
No.
When you look back at it 5 years ago, you were, when it happened, you said, "Ah, yeah, that was coming." That kind of thing.
Sure.
Yeah. And do you think that there's another big issue geopolitically, the international relations part, the Baltic states, you know, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, that they were kind of concerned that what happened in Ukraine would happen to them, and that's why NATO put a whole bunch of brigades in there. One of them, of course, being a Canadian brigade. Thank you very much.
I still think it's a possibility, though. Canadian brigade or no Canadian brigade.
He seems to have taken his attention off that, though, right? And he's much more focused on Syria.
Yeah, but Syria's not his backyard. His backyard is what really...
Right, the empire.
Sets him
like
up,
we said before, the empire. But do you think he screwed up on Syria?
I think he put too much into it.
I mean, he owns it now, right?
Yeah, for all intent purposes.
For all intent, yeah. So, I mean, is this a good thing for Russia or a bad thing for Russia?
Well, it
or for Putin?
See, Putin. I think Putin has Syria as a way of controlling Iran, because that's the key. Iran is what's really at play here, and Putin is doing everything he can to shore up the Iranian regime. He doesn't, because that's a thorn in NATO's side, in the U.S.'s side,
especially
everybody's.
US,
And his one goal in life after rebuilding the empire is to crush NATO. And he absolutely hates NATO. There was a point there with Yeltsin when it was even suggested that the new Russia could join NATO.
Yeah, they did. They did. There was this program called Partnership for Peace, which I think still actually technically exists, where the Eastern European countries would be sort of like in this holding pattern to ultimately join NATO. And yeah, Russia was a member of Partnership for Peace, or maybe still is.
What do you think of Trump? I mean, how far is he into...
How far is Putin into Trump?
No, that I know. I just don't know how much...
Can I tell you what I know?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is from a number of sources. In 2008, when Trump... when you got the crisis, the housing crisis in the United States, the property crisis in the United States, Trump didn't have any trouble. And it seems kind of odd that he wouldn't have, given the fact that he was so leveraged. He had so many loans on these properties, and he still does. He was financed by Russian banks. And these banks are linked to Russian organized crime, obviously.
SEB and all those banks,
And also...
But also
by
oligarchs.
Definition, to the oligarchs.
You know, that
the main one.
That house he sold him in Florida?
That's the problem. It's not the urination with the prostitutes, which may have actually happened. But the real thing that Putin has on
money.
Trump is this thing about the money that came in 2008.
You read the New York Times page?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Ooh.
What a criminal, no?
Man.
I mean, he's a fucking criminal.
Oh, God.
But
he even tried to screw his father.
Yeah, he was making $200,000 a year as a 3-year-old.
Yeah.
By the time he was 8, like, he had $30 million. You know, like. But you asked me about Trump. What do you mean? What do you mean? What do I think about Trump?
No. How much does Trump realize that Putin's got him hanging by a thread?
I think he does. I mean, this money that came from Russia, it's not something that he can just forget about.
But
there has to be an explanation why
the cyber operation that Trump permitted is incredibly sophisticated. And I was talking yesterday to a guy from the current administration in Mexico. And in the one area where López Obrador beat everybody by a mile, was in cyber.
Yeah,
his social media operations were impeccable,
right?
Sophisticated,
yeah.
Expensive.
Okay.
You look at his cabinet, the trouble he's having getting people, smart people, capable people for his cabinet, and he can't. Yet, he has this incredibly sophisticated operation in cyber. It doesn't check out. I mean, he's got to have had help from somewhere.
You think?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, essentially what you're saying is that you think the money came from Putin, from Russia. Somewhere.
Somewhere, and maybe not the money, but yes, the expertise. And it came for free, which is another way.
It would have had to be Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a process of elimination, right? I mean, who would... Well, I mean, there's three or four candidates. North Korea, China. The Chinese wouldn't want López Obrador. They don't need somebody who's going to be a protectionist or anything like that. So you can eliminate China. I don't think North Korea gives a shit what happens in Mexico.
No.
So that only leaves one.
But Russia's always been very active in Mexico. Always.
Oh, since Cold the Kennedy. War. Yeah, exactly.
The Kennedy thing. Yeah.
That's a good point. I mean, Mexico City was considered like a haven for spies back during the Cold War. They would all come here and kind of spy on each other because it was easier.
CIA had a permanent guard outside the Russian embassy here taking pictures of everybody who came in and out.
Because it was easy to do.
Yep. Able to, the Falcon and the Snowman, remember that?
That's a great movie. May I recommend a movie called The Falcon and a Snowman and the Snowman, which, incidentally, part of it takes place in Mexico City.
Yep.
Made in the 80s, I know, but it's still a great film. It makes it easy for Putin to cause a mess.
Yeah.
And that's what he's essentially doing.
Yeah, sure. Well, that's what it's what's in his best interest.
I mean, you're the only other Mexican I've ever met in my life who's got it right on Putin. Who would say, well, you know, NATO did this and NATO did that. Well, it's like, no, these countries have a right to choose what alliance they're going to be part of or if they're not going to join. You cannot tell Poland not to be a member of NATO. And you know what? They're joining NATO because they're afraid.
Sure.
And you know who they're afraid of?
The bear. Listen, I got killed on Twitter because of this. Because
On which bit? On which part exactly?
On the cyber thing. Because... But for
so you were saying that López Obrador was being funded?
Yeah, I was saying that all the signs are there that the Russians helped social media to López Obrador.
Or somebody helped.
And then other candidates.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So, and I mean, especially the López Obrador social media killed me for that. It was me and Leon Krause... And a couple of other techies that were really pushing this, but we got killed. We got killed. We got swarmed by their boss.
And you know that Mexico has absolutely no ability to figure this
absolutely.
Out, right? We do not have the cyber technology to.
I went with a cyber guy who I really trust. He detected a lot of. Activity in Mexico from St. Petersburg. And I took him to the IFE. The INE.
Right.
It's now the INE.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
You took the cyber dude?
Yeah.
Is he one of those like ethical hacker kind of guys? Is that what they call that's what he calls himself?
Yeah. So I took him to INE.
So you're involved in this. I mean you've put yourself on the front line in terms of trying to assure that there's a free and fair election in Mexico.
Sure.
You are one of those people.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wrote about it in El Financiero. I said it on TV.
We were in Europe the whole time. So I missed it. I missed this thing. Okay, so you took the guy to INE.
And then the INE cybersecurity experts came in. And they had a long talk, of which I understood very little, but... They went back and forth.
Bunch of nerdy stuff, right?
Yeah. And then we leave, and I said, what do you think? She said, they got no idea. They just have absolutely no idea.
Yeah.
They don't know. They don't even know how to protect them.
They didn't understand. Yeah. And you know what we have as a country? We have la División Científica de la Policía Federal, the scientific division of the federal police. about 20 or 30 guys who are doing cyber stuff. And Mexico, turns out, is actually one of the top 15 countries in the world for cyber attacks. The guy actually told me that the only thing we can do, the only thing that we have the capacity to handle, is the issue of child pornography and stuff like that. Anything else, financial stuff, the banks handle it themselves.
Look at the banks.
We can't. But they have, you know what, like Citibank has a much bigger division than the federal government of Mexico. So the banks handle their own cybersecurity issues. So the only thing we can do as a country is the issue of child pornography, and you know, we're not doing such a good job.
No, we're not.
So, I mean, it's no surprise to me that Mexico is an open door to these kinds of attacks. Now, is there a law in Mexico that no foreign country can?
Sure.
Okay. In foreign country, in terms of financing, because what they probably, it sounds like what they did was they helped them out in terms of, you know, making the web pages, making the Facebook stuff, which in and of itself isn't illegal. They can do it. But if the money came from outside and the expertise came from outside, it would be technically a violation of the Constitution.
Yes, it would. But see, now everybody wants to play nice with López Obrador. Do you see Madrazo?
Not only him, but Slim, Peña Nieto. The only one who's like, fuck off is Pan. What's his name?
Peña Nieto, I understand, because
it's his job,
yeah,
right?
Well, I mean, it's not only his job, it's his freedom.
Yes, that's another very important point, yeah. But, yeah, the outgoing president has to make it as easy as possible for the transition government. But
we are, I was told by the same guy I was telling you about, I had this conversation yesterday, this guy from Los Pinos. I was told, listen, we're staring at the very real possibility of our next president being Cuauhtémoc Blanco.
See, I don't get that. Sorry, young Canadian. Who's Cuauhtémoc Blanco?
He's a soccer player.
He's a very famous
governor of Morelos.
Okay, all right. Sorry. Dumb Canadian, all right? That's my excuse.
Has anybody ever told you look a lot like Jeff Daniels?
No.
You do?
Oh, well, thank you. I take that as a compliment. I love Jeff Daniels.
Yeah, he's good.
Great actor.
You see Looming Towers?
I didn't. I heard it was really bad.
Ah, no. I liked it. I thought it was pretty
good. This is the Stephen King thing, right?
No. Looming Towers is the story of the clash between the FBI and the CIA that brought the towers down.
Oh, okay. Looming Towers. All right. I'm not going to keep you too much longer. Although this has been so freaking fun, and I wish we can go on for another hour because I'm sure there's more material. But how do you see Mexico then in the next 6 years? Are we screwed? What do you think he can do?
It's not the 6 years that I'm worried about. These people, what they're trying, this is a 50-year project.
Okay.
What they're trying to do is they're organizing the whole country the way they organized Mexico City. Once Cuauhtémoc Cárdenas won Mexico City, they've held it ever since. Because they organized little pressure groups and they are used to and know how to gather all the votes, because people would rather vote for them and get a couple of tortas than...
But him winning, I see it as like a global trend. I mean, we're getting these populist governments all over the place. The left thing isn't so important to me as the populist thing.
He's not left.
Right. Not right politically, but yes. He moves around, which is what populists do. Even Trump sometimes can make himself sound left, you know. And the protectionist stuff is stuff that generally comes from the left. Yep. So it's the populism thing that concerns me the most about López Obrador.
The thing is that they know how to do it. And López Obrador learned it at the PRI. So what he's doing, he's installing a PRI for another 70 years.
You know how I see this guy? Like another Echeverría. Is that?
Yeah, that's a fair comparison.
And the reason why I pick Echeverria because like he says one thing, right, about you know how sovereignty and protection of Mexico and oil resources and all that kind of stuff, but at the same time he's like you know buddy buddy with the Americans, which is what Echeverria really was. And on top of that, a freaking populist. I'm actually worried what's going to happen to the economy. Do you think?
The economy is the problem is he doesn't have the money to do all the stuff he wants to, and he's gonna obtain it somewhere. And
where
his people are not very competent, especially in the economic. Yeah, I mean, there's been hundreds of people leaving Hacienda.
I have to admit, Marcelo Ebrard as foreign secretary is not necessarily such a bad idea.
No,
he seems decent in that sense.
I thought he should have gone to Gobernación.
Fair enough. Yeah, he had probably more experience for that kind of job. Yeah.
Yeah.
As mayor of the city and right, yeah. Reorganizing the police forces in the city. And
Minister Sanchez Cordero was a terrible judge. I don't think she's going to be at all effective there. But anyway, they took away a lot of gobernaciones.
Do you know what I think kind of saves us? The fact that Mexico's a corrupt country means that we're going to have like a lot of resistance to change.
Yeah.
So this is like the one time that corruption, I can't believe I'm saying this, but that corruption is like a good thing for the country. They could actually apply Article 33. But you know what? I don't care. I'm not changing anything I said. What's in store for you now in going forward? Are you retired formally?
No.
So what are you?
Well, I'm just writing in El Financiero. I'm doing TV. I love to blast people on Twitter. Lectures once in a while because there's not many people who know American politics in as much detail as I do.
It's like Mexicans almost kind of fucking defend Putin, like they defend the annexation of Crimea. They do.
I know they do.
They say, "Oh well, it's Russia, right?"
But see, it's not so much. And it's not so much pro Russia as anti-US.
You think it's just like whatever is going to piss off the Americans makes Mexicans happy?
Yeah, I do.
You know, I think that too, but I didn't want to say it, and I'm just saying it right now. You know, I said it in class, but not officially. So and that's exactly what Putin wants. It's like to be a shit disturber.
But see, the thing about Mexicans and the U.S. is, yeah, there's this feeling of resentment or whatever. But it's not against the people. It's not against the actual gringos. It's you know, it's against the concept of country and they took away our land, that kind of stuff.
And you know what?
But it's never personalized.
It used to be in the 70s. It was like anti-American. But you know, I noticed that when Trump won the election, or when Trump was saying the kind of stuff that he was saying, and then ultimately wins the election, the protests in Reformer and at the American Embassy, they were anti-Trump protests.
Yeah.
They weren't anti-American protests, right. Which I thought was a significant evolution and a much more mature public opinion vis-a-vis the United States.
Well, the thing is, more and more and more people have relatives in the U.S.
Yeah.
And so that kind of is making a difference.
Okay, can I ask you one last question about Putin? It's like a very totally politically incorrect question about Putin.
Cool.
I have this theory. Okay, I have this theory. You know he's implemented a lot of like anti-gay. You know what's coming, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he's implemented a lot of anti-gay legislation and so forth. I have this hypothesis like that the most anti-gay people are actually like closet gays, and they try to fight it by doing this kind of stuff. Do you think he might be gay?
He might. Not something I'd ever thought about. but you never
look,
see him.
He's overcompensating on the macho thing because maybe deep down inside he's kind of.
Yeah, but we never even.
You know the.
He never showed his wife publicly, and now they're divorced, I think.
Do you know that they listen to this in Russia? So.
Oh,
they're gonna hear you say that.
RT is everywhere.
Yeah,
RT is everywhere.
No, I mean I have like numerous hits. Every time I have an episode about Putin or international relations and the Russians, like the hits from Russia just go off the scale. The question as to whether or not, you know, there's nothing wrong with being gay. I don't understand if he is gay, why he wouldn't admit it. But
oh, he can't do that. He couldn't do that. Russia? No. Right.
Okay, so the question then evolves into this. Do you think he's overcompensating on the macho thing for some reason? Because you see him holding the fish and doing the chest thing. I mean, what the hell is all that about?
But it's like he's KGB in his heart. It's like being a Marine.
You know, you do this
macho thing because you're a Marine, because you're KGB.
Okay, see, I'm saying that he's doing this macho thing because he might actually be a closet gay.
I'd have to see a lot more proof of that.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you so much for being on this podcast. This is one of the more fun podcasts I've had. We need to work on something to get you to speak to the students and talk about... I'd love it if you could talk about 9/11, Kosovo, Putin, the interview, and stuff like that. I'm sure what's going to happen is that the students are just going to come with like a sin fin número de preguntas.
Yeah, yeah.
So you wouldn't have to talk that much. But I think it would be awesome for the students. Hear what you have to say about these issues because, hey, you were there.
Yep.
Right? It's one thing to sit behind a desk like me, like an academic, and think about these kinds of things. I love the fact that you're confirming almost everything that I thought about him, except the last one, but which suggests to me I'm doing my research well, but it's not the same thing as actually being there, is it?
Well, it's been a good life.
Yeah. It looks like it's been a good life. There's still much more. So, again, thank you for doing this podcast. Thank you for coming to Itam to do the podcast.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Okay.
It's you don't get to talk to people very often that are really into it, you know?
I'm into it.
Yeah. I can tell.
Did Pablo tell you?
You know we could go on for
I know. Hours. That's what I'm saying. We should go drinking. Yeah. But did Pablo tell you what I'm like? I think so, right?
Kind of, yeah.
I wanted to be sort of a surprise.
Oh, okay. So it turns out that me and your dad are, like, identical.
I knew you would hit it off. Another thing you guys have in common is that my dad was also in a rock band or whatever.
Oh, is that right?
Uh-huh. Look, that's him.
All right.
That's me when in my early 20s or late teens. And so you were in a rock band?
We opened for the Doors.
You're messing with me, man.
No.
You opened for the Doors?
Yeah.
What was the name of the band?
Pop Music Team.
What kind of music was it? Was it like...
Oh, it was mostly...
Well, your son... By the way, I have to say, because nobody can see this, that Barry Manilow right now is cracking up and he's turned like a tomato.
it's just the worst name ever for a band.
I would agree.
It was great then.
Yeah, but what kind of music...
Played covers.
Pop from the 80s or 70s?
No, the 80s weren't here yet, man. This is the 70s.
Okay, so the covers we're doing are real good.
We did a lot of Beatles and Chicago's and a lot of Doors.
Okay. That's good, because if you were a cover band for, like, you know, 80s music, that would have been scary. That's right, Morrison. So Morrison, you met Morrison?
Yeah, I met Morrison.
That is so freaking cool. Oh my God.
I actually presented him with a bottle of tequila,
which he drank immediately.
Drank down, yeah.
Knowing who this guy was. What was the name of the band again? You got to say it again.
Pop Music Team.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. That's almost as bad as having the name Barry Manilow.
You Google it. You can Google it.
I will. Pop
Music
Team. Pop Music Team, right? Yeah. Pop Music Team. Oh, is it Pop Music Team?
Team, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to YouTube it. You know what? Is there any chance there's any music on YouTube?
There's music, but not on YouTube. You probably find it in...
Because I'd love to have it for my intro and outro.
There's something there. If you Google it, you'll get some music.
Okay,
there.
So I'm going to put it as intro and outro. Is that okay?
We became famous because we did a song called Tlatelolco.
Oh.
Right after it happened.
Okay.
And Gobernacion crashed down on the radio station that played it and confiscated the tapes. It was a mess. I had to hide in my house for like 2 months without seeing the light of day.
What did the song say?
Because nothing. It was in English.
Any way I can find that song?
It's there. I'm sure it's there. But didn't say anything. But just the name.
Yeah.
Really worried.
Right in the middle of the Olympics, a popular song in Mexico called Plata Loco. Wow. Jorge, what an honor, my friend.
No,
what
my an pleasure. Dug our treasures there. Can you still recall the time we cried? Bring on new to the other side. Bring on new to the other side.
Your arms, country.